Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Sports cards is a lifestyle. Sports cards and we live now.
Jeremy Lee in the building and every guest that you ever needed. Sports cards after hours keep the hobby heated. Updates, hobby talk like you never seen it. Sports cards live and none could ever beat it.
Sports cards is a lifestyle. Sports cards and we live now.
Welcome to another episode of Sports Cards Live with your host, Jeremy Lee.
All right, everybody. Welcome to episode number 212 of Sports Cards Live. It is Saturday night, January the 13th, 2024. My name is Jeremy Lee. I would like to thank everyone who tuned in last week for our episode with Rex Morgaard. We talked about unopened and sealed packs, vintage, and vending machines. A lot of fun. You can check that out on the YouTube channel. MC Mondays is back this week on Monday and tomorrow night. Josh Madigan of the Gong Show joins me for the weekly PWCC hockey auction watch party. Check out both those episodes if you'd like. We will be here. I'd like to ask you to join close to 500,000 people who've downloaded the Center Stage app across both iOS and Android for quick comps and accurate prices for when you are pricing your cards at home or at card shows. They have management features. You can build, organize, and share your collections with your friends and find other collectors to follow using their social sharing features. Check out their Instagram account and please join me in supporting the great team they have and the innovation they're undertaking. Also, practice safe swaps. VeriSwap is an app and middleman service that lets you securely trade cards through the mail. Every transaction up to $1 million in value is fully insured by their guarantee. Check them out on iOS and Android. They're offering $50 in free trade credit to anybody who adds 10 hockey cards to their account. You can also join me and VeriSwap founder Raymond Lee every second Tuesday on Instagram Live for our VeriSwap Trade Desk 10 to 12 minute little live episodes that we do. I'd like to shout out hobbynewsdaily.com. Check them out for daily content and podcasts and YouTube shows and articles. Really cool collaboration going on hobbynewsdaily.com. And of course, Leighton Sheldon and Just Collect. Unfortunately, Leighton will not be joining us today for the Vintage Spotlight. I'm disappointed. I know our guest is disappointed, but he'll hopefully be back next Saturday. Also want to let you all know you can buy and sell tag graded cards on ComC, and Tag's new Tag X grading service is a game changer. Pokemon, Lorcana, and other rounded corner TCG game cards are now eligible for grading. Visit taggrading.com if you value transparency and consistency in card grading. I want to thank all partners, sponsors, and of course, loyal viewers and listeners for your ongoing support. Coming up on 4 years of that support. If you're not yet subscribed to the channel or the podcast, please take a moment and do so. And as always, tonight, your comments and your questions are in play. Let's get to it. Tonight's guest started in the hobby in 1983 at the age of 9 when he started buying packs of Topps baseball cards, which to this day is still his favorite design and not a bad one. I like it too. He took a break from 1990 all the way until the pandemic in 2020, and he started his podcast in June of last year. His favorite players of all time are Willie McGee, Ricky Henderson, Mark McGuire, Barry Bonds, and Bob Sanders. And his favorite teams of all time are the St. Louis Cardinals, Las Vegas Raiders, and the Iowa Hawkeyes. He's originally from St. Louis, Missouri, currently hailing from Iowa City, Iowa. Let's bring him out. Dave Schwartz, welcome to Sports Cards Live. Dave, how are you doing tonight?
Good, Jeremy. It's great to see you. I'm a big fan of the show, your professionalism, your enthusiasm, and I'm excited to talk to you and your guest tonight, you and your audience tonight.
Well, thanks, Dave. I am enthused to have you on. I've told you I've been looking forward to this. I've been listening to your podcast since it started, and the way that I found out about you, Dave, was because you've been doing a service to the hobby on Instagram. It's got to be close to a year now, I'm guessing, where really every morning when you get up, you actually go out there and you gather all the podcasts that dropped in the hobby, and you do a story post on your Instagram saying, here are the hobby podcasts that have been dropped in the last 24 hours or so. You include mine on there. You include many more. And I got to tell you, I found a few podcasts that way. I think I've told you about a few podcasts to add to the list. You have a website where you share all the different podcast options and some YouTube channels as well. I want to hear your hobby history, but I got to start by asking you this, Dave. What made you start doing that in the first place?
Sure. So I have a fairly long commute to work each day. I spend about two and a half to 3 hours a day in the car. And so I was already into the hobby for quite a while at that point, really enjoying content. That's how I learned the hobby when I got back into it, because the time when I left the first time, it was just cardboard, no grading, no drama, except for the, you know, some of those old school dealers who would, you know, rip off the kids. But otherwise, there was really no sorts of drama. So podcasts really helped me understand what I was doing. Not so much YouTube, because I wouldn't just sit down on the couch and watch it, but in the car, I was captive. I listened to it. But every now and then, a podcast would just sort of drift off into the atmosphere. It would be gone. And made me think that people, so many of the podcasters out there are just doing it because they enjoy it. It's a hobby. And the best kind of feedback we can give them is our time, our ears, our attention, because they're not making any money on it. And if somebody feels like they're wasting their time, like they're talking to nobody, of course they're going to stop. And of course they're going to go away. So it's sort of two reasons why I did it. One was sort of selfish, because I didn't want people to keep going away. I needed that company on my commute, but also just as a way of trying to say thank you, as a way of trying to say that there are people out here who are listening to you. There are people out here who are trying to support what you're doing. And the least that I could do is take 3 minutes every morning and jump onto Instagram, which is free, and just say, hey, here are 2 or 5 or 10 hobby podcasts that have been updated over the last 24 hours.
Yeah, I got to tell you, when I first saw you do that and you had Sports Cards Live on there, I was very flattered and very, very grateful. And I still am. I think it's a wonderful thing that you do. So, you know, everybody, if you're watching this and you don't know Dave Schwartz, you don't know Iowa Dave, the Shallow End podcast, you have to be following him on Instagram, and then you can be brought up to speed every day on what podcasts have dropped. Maybe you'll find some new ones as well. And then you started your own podcast, which I think was maybe inevitable. Before we get into that, though, let's just talk a bit about your history. I mentioned in the intro that you got into the hobby in 1990. You took a break, though, for a while. And then I said you didn't come back until the pandemic, but that was a bit of a white lie. You dipped your toes back in 2003. So just take us quickly through that progression.
Sure. So I got in 1983 and I got out in 1990. And I don't remember why I got in, other than I've always been a baseball fan, always been a sports card fan, a collector of things, right? And in 1983, I just know that's when I started collecting. And it helped that it was such a gorgeous design on Topps Baseball that year. Growing up in a town like St. Louis, where baseball is a religion, those are the types of cards that I wanted to collect that year. Plus, my favorite player growing up at that youngest age was Willie McGee. Everyone thinks that when you're from St. Louis and you're from that era, that it's Ozzie Smith, but he was more like the national guy. If you were from St. Louis, you knew that the guy was Willie McGee. And so his rookie card was in 1983, always chased it, never got it, and just collected straight through to 1990, and, you know, had rows and rows and boxes full of commons and some pretty good cards as well, you know, good cards for that era. 1990, I don't think it's a coincidence, that's when I turned 16 and got a car, got a job that, you know, required things like I could not put gas in my car, that sort of thing. And I just sort of got distracted. I know that I'm pretty sure 1990 is when I got out, because the last big chase car that I remember were Frank Thomas rookies. And so those were 1990. And I just kind of moved on. Then I went to college and grad school and that sort of thing. And then in 2003, I dabbled a little bit, because that was when I started to discover eBay. And I didn't discover eBay for cards. I discovered eBay for knickknacks and other things and big boxes of used golf balls, because at the time I was playing golf. And so I can get them cheap there. And I stumbled across cards again and realized that I never stopped enjoying them. I just stopped being a part of the hobby because the other parts of life took over. And so I actually bought a couple of cards while I was in that era of 2003. One was a 94 A-Rod SP foil. Bought it raw, and I'd never seen cards that were that shiny before. I wasn't aware of refractors. It is clear that cards had taken a technological leap, right? I was fascinated, but then also vintage. And so I bought like a 68 or a 69 Pete Rose. I like Pete Rose when I was growing up as well. So I bought one of those raw. Neither one cost me a whole lot of money. I think maybe the A-Rod was 15, 20 bucks, and that felt like too much. But nonetheless, that was it. I was gone again. 2005, again, life takes over, right? I get married in 2000. No, I'm sorry. Got married in 2002. Kid comes along in 2005. First one, first of three. 2007 comes another kid. 2010 comes kid number three. And while we're, in the throes of raising kids, I again get on eBay. And this time I become enamored. This is around 2011, 2012. I become really enamored with the 53 top Satchel Paige, thinking, okay, if I'm going to get back in, this is going to be the card that I want. But nonetheless, it just wasn't the right time. You know, when you've got three kids who are, you know, age five or under, there are other places that you need to be putting your money when that's not your career. Like, what if you're not going to be flipping, if you're not going to be opening a shop, if you're not going to be at shows, this is not the time to be waiting back into that area. But finally, you know, COVID happens, and one weekend go back to St. Louis where my dad still lives, and my parents, they never touched my cards while I was gone for 2.5 to 3 decades. They never bothered them. They were still in the right side of my childhood room in the closet, in the exact same order, in the exact same stacks as where I had left them almost 30 years before. And so I went back and I thought maybe, you know, I knew that cards were picking up steam. You know, there were articles on them about ESPN. It was sort of, so it was back into my brain. And I probably had about 30 to 40,000 cards. And we drove down there, visited my dad, and on the way back, loaded them all up into the back of our car and then drove back and sold most of them. Recycled a bunch of 1987, 88 Topps cardboard that wouldn't even be worth ComC, right? Ended up recycling a bunch. And graded about 12. And so much of my good fortune in this hobby since I've been back has been luck. And by pure luck, I send about 12 to 15 cards to PSA right before the glut happened, right before. And so I got them back, I don't know, not that long, 6-8 weeks. It was great, right? And I sold them off, and I couldn't believe how much they were going for at this point, right? This was what became the boom. I didn't know that. I just thought, hey, what a great hobby. And I'm selling cards off like crazy. And I sell them all off except for a couple that I knew wouldn't get anything, that belonged to old family, that sort of thing. Like my dad's old 57 Red Shandies. I'm not going to sell that, right? But the last card of mine from my childhood that I did not sell was the 1991 Michael Jordan Upper Deck, the baseball card, where he's wearing the White Sox uniform. It's like his baseball XRC is what I like to call it. And I got a PSA 10 on it. So I have a Michael Jordan PSA 10 card during the boom. I said to my wife, do you mind if I just sell this one, but keep the funds just to kind of get back involved? And she's like, I don't care. She's supportive. She goes, sure, go ahead. Because up until that point, so much of what I had sold went to grocery money and other bills, and it was great. So she didn't care if I kept one. The card ended up selling for $700-$800, right? And so there we go. That was my treasure chest. And the first card I bought when I was back into the hobby was an Anthony Edwards Prism Base rookie. Probably for about five times what it would cost now. but I was back in. And so from that moment on, I've been back in the hobby.
All right. Well, that's a nice timeline. And the one thing I want to go back, you said this a few minutes ago now, was, you know, Willie McGee was your favorite player to collect 83 tops. And I'm thinking to myself, I would have loved to be in the schoolyard with you because I could have traded you my Willie McGee's for Tony Gwynn's and Ryan Sandberg's and Wade Boggs. And I might have come out a little bit ahead. Were you also chasing those key rookie cards back then, or didn't even know who they were back then?
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Not right away, but pretty soon. I got pretty involved. I subscribed to Beckett. We had in St. Louis, there were 3 or 4 or 5 card shops that were 15 minutes away that my parents would drive me to on the weekends. And so I got pretty involved with it. So when I went back and got the collection out of my dad's house in 2020, cards, I had kept a lot of my cards already in top loader. So I was already preserving them. And so there were Boggs. There were, like you said, Sandbergs and Tony Gwynn's and Canseco's and McGuire's and 74 Dave Winfield's, those types of cards up through the 89 Ken Griffey Jr. and some Frank Thomas. And so, yeah, I recognize, I even back then I sort of had on the brain that old thinking of, oh man, I'm going to be rich someday, right? And so I definitely pursued cards that I perceived would be worth something. Kirby Puckett, Eric Davis, those types of players. And I kept them, thankfully, in top loaders. And I only got maybe 2 or 3 PSA 10s out of those 15 cards that I would submit 30 years later. But yeah. I'm still grateful that I had the sense, you know, 3 decades ago to put them.
I was one of those rare kids in the 80s also that kept my card. They were my precious belongings, and I kept them in as good a condition as I could before sleeves and top loaders and, you know, just nice and square in a box on the floor in my closet. Good memories, Dave. We have some similar history there. Let's say hello to, we got Jake Dahl with us. Jake, what is going on? 86 collectibles. Thank God it's Saturday. There we go, contender. That comment is just too funny. JP says, yeah, good warming up down there. Yeah, it is cold here, and I did get an alert that there could be power outages here in Calgary tonight, so hopefully I don't get kicked off the show. Todd McDonald, what is going on? Dan's Vintage, looking forward to learning some more budget ideas. Peeps, good evening. Cardboard Corner, yes, JP, hopefully no Alberta power outage. Hello to Joe Sacco. Mike is in the house. Contender says Ricky Henderson's stealing record will never, ever be broken. Bob Hosta, we're going to be talking about Bob because he is your most recent guest on your podcast, an episode I really enjoyed. We'll be talking about that soon. Bob, welcome to the show. Chris Olivo, welcome to the show as well. Diversity for my collection. Yes, sir. Mookie Chilson says attention is a valuable commodity. Both these guys worthy of my time. Thank you, Mookie Chilson. He said that when he was talking about when you were talking about, Dave, how, you know, your people are listening to podcasts and consuming content. Good evening, Professor Tom Newman. Good to see you, Jeff McMahon. Good to see you. Contender, this question is an episode all in of itself, but I'm going to ask you, Dave, how do you define vintage cards? Where is the cutoff for you? If you have a kind of quick answer to that.
I just think 1979, 1980, right around there. And that's not my idea. I think baseball card collector Mike from I forget the name of his show, but he takes it from end of World War II, so about 48 through 79, and that's good enough for me.
Yeah, I go till 89, personally. We can have a chat offline. I'll try and bring you over to the dark side on that one for sure. Chris C., good evening to you. 90s collector, what's happening? Brett S., good evening. Jeremy, Mr. Foul Five Ball, thank you for being here. Yes, good day, gents. And Hobby Champs is here. All right, so, Dave, let's talk about your podcast. We're going to talk about more what you collect a little bit later, but I want to talk about your podcast because, with Dave Schwartz, with Iowa Dave Sports Cards, we can get so much ideas and thoughts out of him by talking about the episodes that he's done. Because you have, first of all, his podcast, it's must listen. I feel it's must listen for anybody, because whether you hobby in the shallow end or you hobby in the middle or the deep or the extreme deep end, there are some concepts that come out of his episodes that you can apply to any price point, any approach. So I want to talk about it, Dave. And, I want to first talk about, how did you start? What was the, you were telling everybody about all the other podcasts out there in the hobby, and then you started. And I was really happy to see that you were going to start. Now we're going to get to hear the voice behind the account, learn who is Iowa Dave. But tell exactly, like, what was that aha moment? When and why did you start? And what kind of, who were you encouraged by?
Sure. So I actually had a podcast briefly, not sports related, around 2012, 2013, that was related to my work. And it only lasted 20 episodes or so. So I had some small bit of experience in the appreciation of podcasts. Last April or May or so, right after, so last March is when I started every morning putting that list out there on Instagram. Sometime around April, May, I got an instant message over Instagram from Rob Girard. And he was asking me something sort of innocent about, what do you actually listen to, right? What kind of podcasts are you into and why? And I think he thought I was going to give him a short little list and a short little answer, and that was going to be it. And instead, I think I probably made him regret the question that I sort of joked that way, because I sent him a book back, right? Multiple messages saying, here are four or five things that I look for. Here's why I think that they're important. And I was sort of going back on my previous history of doing this, things that I listened to on my own, things that I liked, that I didn't like, things that were helpful in this hobby, things that were not, what turned me off, what turned me on. And he writes back one sentence, do you want a podcast? And then we started talking a little bit. My first response was, no, I don't. I don't know how mine would be any different or any better than anyone else's. I listened to yours. There were some, probably about a half dozen others that I would listen to religiously. And then some others that I would just supplement based on topic, right? And then I said, well, let me get back to you. Let me think about it. Let me see if there's something that I could do that would be different or that would be helpful, or that there'd be some sort of a niche that I could feel, but that would also would feel organic to me, because I don't want to force something, right? And then about a week later, as I'm driving into work where I do all my thinking, it just sort of popped into my head that there aren't a whole lot of podcasts up there that focus explicitly on collectors like myself, who are kind of like low-end collectors. And, I might have a couple of cards at the time that were maybe three figures, but most of the time, if a card was getting over $40, I had to really think about whether this is a purchase that I wanted to make or needed to make. And I didn't know if this was going to be like a long-term successful type of podcast. I don't know how one even determines the word successful, but I thought, that's it. I'm in the shallow end, and I right away had the title, and I messaged him and I said, okay, here's my idea. A piece about the shallow end, called The Shallow End, for collectors who are on a budget. And he wrote back and said, sounds great. I love it. Maybe in about a month, after you've had some time to develop some stuff, do a test episode, let's do it. And the rest is history.
So I'm sorry. Why was it, let's do it?
Why did I say, thank you. Yes, of course. Because he was looking to expand. So, he was part of that group called the Wolfpack. So the Wolfpack was him, Cousins Collectibles, the Crosstown Cardboard guys, Big Ken from Sports Card Lessons, and some other guy named Dave, who I don't know, who does not have a podcast. And he wanted to sort of create some affiliate shows on the Wolfpack network. So he had his show, Ken had his show, the other guys had their shows. And he brought in Collect What You Love, and brought in me to do these sort of new shows. And I think he was going to bring in other shows past that, but that just sort of fell through. But Erica from Collect What You Love and I did shows. She did hers on a limited run, I think 4 to 8 episodes, and mine just sort of kept going. And although his dream of almost a network of podcasts didn't happen, mine never ended. And even after his troubles came and went, I took my podcast off the Wolfpack Network and have been doing it myself ever since.
Got it. Okay. Yeah, I was just curious about that. So that makes sense. Okay. So let's get into some of the topics that you've gotten into, because again, this is where there's good stuff. So I want to talk about an episode you did with Paul Hickey. Yeah. And his podcast is called Sports Card Strategy. He's, as you mentioned in your episode with him, he is all about sports cards as a way to make money. And a lot of people don't like that approach. And a lot of people, you know, but you had a great episode with him. I just want to get your thoughts on that episode with Paul, and sort of, you know, some of the key points, the key ideas that came out of that for you. Cause I know your intro to that episode, you are very excited about this episode. You thought it was really good. And I want to get from you, what were some of the key takeaways you had?
Absolutely. And so Paul Hickey has become a friend of mine in the hobby, and you know, they talk about opposites attract. He's somebody who is all about making money in the hobby. I'm all about just trying to have fun in the hobby. But what I love so much about Paul is that there's nothing fake about him. He's not an investor who's going to say, okay, I'm going to embed myself with the collectors now and pretend that I'm a collector. He comes right out and says, no, I'm here to make some money. Here's how I'm going to help you. But I wanted to bring someone different onto the show. And so we had talked, we had met at National last year. We had talked online as well. And so we just talked about things that we should be thinking about, even if we are just collectors, such as like the right time of the year to sell, right time of a season to sell, when not to sell. But the thing that really blew me away, the thing about that episode that almost took my breath away, is when he said, as you start thinking about collecting, as you have this card that you really want, ask yourself, once you've got it, then what? And it's just two words, right? It's then what or now what? And I didn't know how to answer him, but I had felt that before, this idea of this chase, like you're going after this card, you've got to have this card, right? And then you finally get it and you're like, all right, well, got it.
Yeah.
On to the next one, right? On to the next one. And a lot of times the interviews, I hope other people will take something from it and they can help, you know, influence their collecting, shape their hobby in some way. But that one really kind of wrecked me for a couple of weeks, where I actually didn't buy for a couple of weeks because I was so much in my head about it. Like, okay, well, I really want to get this Otani, or I want to get this Bo Jackson. And then what does that mean once I do? And should I even collect anything? Should I just quit the hobby? Because what does it matter? If the whole goal is to get a card, and then once you get it, you're fine, and you move on to the next card, right? What's the point? And because of that, it really forced me to take a closer look at my collection, to not buy so spontaneously. Although I still do. I mean, impulse is part of this hobby, right? Sometimes we all just hit buy and then it comes. You're like, oh, that was dumb. Or you get it and you think, well, that was great. I'm glad I did that. But he did help me become more intentional with what I'm doing. And since that moment, I've been able to shape my PC in a way that I hadn't really thought about before. And so it kind of tells me that even people who come from the hobby from a different perspective than you do, and certainly he and I are on polar opposite sides of what sports cards are all about, but if you just open your mind and listen to somebody whose philosophy you might not identify with, you can still learn a lot about yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. I love your open-mindedness to it. And I met Paul at the Mint Collective, whether it was last year or the year before, really nice guy. And, oh, nice. And like you, I do admire that he's just doing what he's doing, and he's plugging away and moving forward with it. And he's a very nice guy, very nice, lots of energy. And he loves the hobby for what it is and for how he.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Approach it, but I love the then what question. Now, you did another episode where you talk about the six questions. This is your framework that you've built for yourself, Dave, where you have six questions that you ask yourself before you're about to buy a card. And we're not going to go to that episode yet. But one of those questions, I think it's question four, is then what? So And I think that that is it's a really important question to ask, because as collectors who we can buy cart, we can online shop anytime we want. There's no, the stores never close in this hobby. So we chase cards, we lust for them, we see them, they get listed on a marketplace, we wait for the final few seconds, we make our bids along the way, we maybe bid at the end, we win the card, we wait for it to come. Finally, you have your mail day, it arrives, you go through the process of receiving it and processing it into your collection, whatever that looks like for you. And then what do you do? Like, do you put it up on the wall? I have some cards right there. I've got about 50 cards on my wall there. I got a few over there, a few behind me over there. That's just a sample of my collection. The rest of them are in boxes and they're stored away. And I look at them every so often, but that's it. I don't look at them every day and, you know, and just like gaze at them. I look at them every so often. And the then what to me, the way I want to be able to answer that, Dave, is then what? Well, then I want to make sure that I still love owning it, because as soon as I fall out of love with owning a card, then it moves from the PC into the trader box. And now it can be moved one way or another. So that's my then what. And there was a question that came into the chat here. Contender asks, how do you guys decide what to keep and what to sell for your personal collection? It's a really good question. Now, for me, I kind of make that decision before I buy the card in the first instance. But then there's the second instance where anywhere from, you know, maybe I get the card, it doesn't look like I thought it would. Or maybe 5, 10, 15 years go by, it's like, I don't love this card anymore. So, you know, the question, how do you decide? I think it's more the question better for me, Contender, and for you, David, I want to get your thoughts in a moment, is when do you decide? So for me, before every big card show that I'm set up at, I kind of go through the PC and think, do I still love these cards? And once I don't, I take out, I let them simmer for a few days. I go to them again a few days later. I make sure I'm still out of love with them. And then I will put them in the box that's going to go to the show with me. So it's a then what and a when as well. So that's kind of how I look at it. What about you for your collecting habits?
For me, it's a feeling, right? When I'm looking at them, I don't have a large collection. When I'm looking at a card and I start thinking about how much can I get for it versus how much I enjoy it, I'm trying to train myself to realize, okay, this might be time for this one. And so I'll sort of set it aside. And when I find a card that I want more, and if it's something that's going to take a little bit of saving for, I will immediately go back to those cards that I just don't have those feelings for anymore. It sounds like a relationship, doesn't it?
It does.
It does, right? You know, one card I might show later, I don't want to give away right now, but I just got it a couple of weeks ago. I had sort of lusted after it for a while. And on an older podcast, I mentioned that I had to sell about 24 cards to get it. It ended up being closer to 32, 33 cards. And all the cards that I got rid of were just cards that were just nothing that I cared about anymore. They were cards that I realized I could get back anytime that I wanted, right? They were highly graded 1980s iconic type cards, right? So, you know, Jose Canseco, those types of cards. I get those back anytime I want. But when I look at it and I start thinking about its value and what it can do for me instead of how much I'm enjoying it, that's it. It's already gone. I might not have admitted it to myself yet, but at that point, the card is already gone.
Yeah. The key there is cards you can get back anytime. I've recently gone through the process of, you know, disposing of several cards from my personal collection. I wasn't originally planning on selling for another 25 years, but things happen in life and you make decisions on the fly. And it was a very, very challenging process for me to go through these and look at the card and literally what you said, do I get a feeling from the card? Like, does it go through my body? Is it something that if I don't have this, I'm going to be sad about? Or, you know, and some cards, you know, I'll be sad about selling off my Patrick Waugh 1986 OPG rookie card, but I can get one anytime. There's no shortage of them out there. It's not a rare card. So that's the second, like, number one, am I going to have a negative emotional reaction to selling a card or taking a card out of the PC? And number two, if that's the case, how challenging will it be to reacquire it down the road? And if it's, I will be emotionally hurt, but it won't be hard to get it back, then it's okay. I can let that one go for the short-term needs I'm having, and I can buy it back later on when things kind of you know, work themselves out. So I think it's really important to look at cards you can potentially get. And this all plays into the then what discussion too, right? Because then what? Well, then maybe this is a card you can end up selling if you need to raise money for something else in real life or for other cards down the road. And we'll maybe talk a bit about the whole.
And have you noticed too, you never know. It's always peculiar. You never know which ones you're still going to connect with and which ones you won't. So here I am. I'm getting rid of Fred McGriff. I'm getting rid of Mark McGuire's, Jose Canseco's. But then I come across the Bo Jackson, also a very common card, but I just couldn't do it. Right. Mm-hmm. There was something about Bo that I just couldn't do. And if I rationally or logically tried to think about it, I wouldn't be able to come up with an answer, which is why I think it's important to really listen to those vibes, those feelings, those emotions.
Yeah, no, for sure. For sure. Okay. I want to talk about the Bob Hosta episode, but first I just want to welcome non-sport showcases. Saturday nights are all right for fighting. And Jaylee, must be UFC. Welcome to the show, non-sport showcase. Chris C says some of the best deals I've still found in dollar boxes of card shows. If you have the patience, there's no doubt about that. Drake's PC, good evening. Drake, one of the best guys in the hobby as well. Good to see you, Drake. Irish Flyers, Neil says, I'm like Dave, shallow end base cards matter. No doubt. Chris C, agree. We all had pre-90s. All we had pre-90s were base cards. And that one little point comes, one of your six questions, Dave, is, and I'm kind of giving away a bit of the later, but is if it's a rookie card, why is that so important when a subsequent card may be nicer? And then I'm adding, why are rookie cards so important? And it's partially because back in the 80s and 90s, you know, you really only had one card per year per player, you know, per manufacturer, especially in the 80s. That plays into me as to why I am not as, why rookie cards don't matter as much to me as they used to. I think the status of the rookie card is being eroded slightly by the evolution of the hobby overall. But we'll get back to that. Chris C, thanks for that. Mike Petty says shallow end prevails. Hobby Champs Cousins is still around. I just caught one of their episodes the other day. Lapper, what is going on? Dan says, then what? Display the card, read the back of the card, make it part of a set, enjoy your cards. And great advice there for sure from Dan. He says, if you can't enjoy your cards when they're in your hand, why are you even in the hobby? And like, I remember one guy I was talking to years ago, Dave, I said, what do you do with all these cards? They just sit in a box in my closet. And I couldn't understand. I'm like, do you ever look at them? Because here's a funny thing, Dave, too. Sometimes I will avoid looking at one of my boxes for as long as possible so that when I go to it, it's like, oh, I've been waiting so long. It's like, you know, like the longer you wait to eat, the hungrier you get sort of thing.
I forgot about this card, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I almost just want to make it last longer. I want to make sure I don't get tired of it. I mean, you know, if you look at anything every day, you might get tired of it. So anyway, okay.
If I could say one thing, Dan's Vintage Baseball, I completely agree about the back of the card. I think the back of the card is the most underrated part. Such incredible facts. Or when we were growing up, it was just those stats. And I would love it when you would get a veteran player in the 80s, someone who had begun in the 60s, like Nolan Ryan, and you'd almost get a magnifying glass out just to read all those years of stats in the back. And I think I learned math that way, right? I learned data that way. It's a fantastic part of cards.
Me, I love the back of cards, especially as a kid when there were cartoons and little. So here's what he did in the off season to earn money, right? Back when these guys didn't train, only train in the off season. Dan goes on to say, cards as art, history, nostalgia, inherited nostalgia, learning objects, conversation pieces. Yeah, Dan, you're nailing it right there. Definitely agree with that for sure. Mike Petty says, I'm a latchkey. I never fall out of love. That's great. I mean, that tells me that you're buying only cards that you know you're going to be able to love for a long time. Now, Neil, Irish Flyers collector, a very important question of the night. He says, Jeremy and Dave, when do we get to the hair care tips topic, asking for a fellow follically challenged collector? Yes, Dave, you and I could do a podcast on how to manage big hair. Big hair. Mike says, Kurt's hair care whacking. Very good. Very good. Contender says, what sport over the next 5 years do you both think will have the biggest boost in popularity? I mean, I don't know. That's a not really a question that I have an answer. Hockey is just ripe. It's ripe to grow. It's so much fun and exciting. Dave, anything to throw out there?
Women's basketball, just because of the rise of Caitlin Clark. Otherwise, I think we're just going to see a rising trajectory for all sports. You know, North America, Western Europe, they cannot get enough of their sports.
Well said. Just Legends, welcome to the show. Larry says, I love the 56 Koufax over the 55 rookie, says this nicer looking card. And that's subjective to me. I like 55s better than 56s. I think they're a little bit cleaner personally. And I love the Koufax rookie in that set. But I love that Larry is saying that for me, it's the 56 and rookie cards. Okay, let's just talk about rookie cards for a second here. Okay, Dave? Rookie cards were, it was almost indoctrinated into us as collectors because of the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And when Beckett magazine came out and rookie cards became a thing, they were even labeled as such, that those were the cards to get because it's the oldest card of the player. But back then, like I said, you only have one Sandy Koufax card in 1955. You only have one Roberto Clemente. You only have one Nolan Ryan card in 68, and he shares it with Jerry Kuzman. But still, it's his rookie card. So that was the only option. And in the second year, there's only one card as well. Nowadays, there's 1,200 rookie cards, and then there's very few cards, you know, many fewer in subsequent years, unless your name is, you know, Shohei Ohtani or Mike Trout or Sidney Crosby or, you know, McDavid, one of these guys, Luca and so forth. But I think the rookie card, Dave, and I want to get your thought on this really quick. Back when there was only one, or in the 80s in baseball, and they got Fleer and Donruss as well, and some controversy between extended series and that kind of thing. But even with three rookie cards, okay, you can have your choice of three, and whichever one you want, that's great. It's, you don't have many options. Nowadays, I feel like the rookie card has been watered down, and I know it's still the darling of the hobby, but it's not the darling for me anymore. I much prefer a non-RC designated card for the player that I want a card of, whether it's from his rookie year or a later year. I like RY cards. Rookie year to me is the new RC because it's still a rookie year card. Might not have the RC technical designation, but I don't care. Still a card that came out of those packs in the rookie year. So I personally, while I've always been a rookie collector and I still am for cards really up until whatever, the mid 2000s, let's say, I don't care. I think rookie cards have lost their, for me, it's just, they've lost their allure for me in the last several years. And I'm probably in the minority here and I'm okay with that, but how do you respond to all that?
I think rookie cards have lost the allure for a lot of people, but I think that people don't want that allure to be gone. When you see the intensity and the ferocity of the arguments over things like what is a rookie card, what is the true rookie card? Those are indicators that we want the value of a rookie card to be back. I don't know if that can happen because there are just so many options. There's that RC Shield medallion is on just so many things at this point, whether it's a Topps card, a Panini card, a Leaf card, anything else, right? There's still something about having the first of something. We talk about the first Prism in 2012, the first set of Topps in 52. A rookie signifies the first. It's not always the first. I don't want to get into the whole 86 Jordan debate, right? Or, you know, but if we're talking about what's really a rookie card, and if it has to be pack pulled, then Michael Jordan doesn't have a rookie card. He has a first card, but he doesn't have a rookie card. Stan Musial doesn't have a rookie card. He started around 43 or so, and it wasn't until 48 when it came out. But people want those two players to have rookie cards, so therefore we call them. So I think that shows how important the rookie card still is to the hobby. Now, me personally, I like them to a certain point, right? There are so many alternates and variations and parallels now that, you know, that fight over what is a rookie card is impossible to win. I'm a baseball card collector, so I suppose Topps Base Series 1, 2, and update would be the rookie, but I also don't. It's hard, although I say I just care about the collection, I also care somewhat about the value, right? And for example, this past year, being a Cardinals fan, I was really excited by Jordan Walker, the rookie card. His rookie came out in Series 2. I can go turn over my couch cushions right now and find enough change to buy his rookie card, the base, right? I don't want that. Instead, I want a parallel. But is the parallel actually the rookie card? And then my head just starts to hurt. And I just kind of want to stop thinking about it, right? So I don't know. I don't have a definitive answer other than to say that it's clear how important the rookie card is. But it's also clear that the waters have been muddied so much that I don't know how we reach a conclusion on this kind of a discussion.
Well, we had, yeah, I like that. And we had some comments in the chat as to why rookie cards are important. So I'm going to get to them. I want a couple of other comments. First, Joe Perot says, I sometimes ask myself, would I pay what I could get for the card? That's a question I asked too. The funny thing is there, that's a different topic. We'll get back to rookie cards in a second. But with Joe's comment here is, okay, I've got this card here. I could probably sell it for $500. Well, would I go buy it right now if I didn't own it for $500? If the answer is no, well, logically speaking, shouldn't we be selling that for $500? Because you wouldn't go buy it, but we don't. Well, I know I don't a lot of the time because I already have the card and I want it, but it doesn't mean I'd buy it again. It's one of those psychological conundrums we have as hobbyists. We have Oz, the people's mailman from Cousins Collectibles in the audience, who says, you have us in the grave already. These guys are still rocking the pod. As I said, I just listened to one of their episodes within the last 2 or 3 days. Orlando, a collector's dream. Good to see you, buddy. Welcome to the show. Chris C says, any Koufax is a good Koufax. Can't argue with that. Now, Chris Olivo here talks about rookie cards. The reason the rookie card should be the most important of a player as it gives the hobby stability. If it's a free-for-all on what to collect, you'll have a lot of new collectors that get confused. I sort of see what you're saying, Chris. I think it gives some guidance. It just gives you something to look at and say, like, if you're going to collect a player, where do you go first? What's the first card? And logically, it's the rookie card. But, I mean, for a rookie who has, you know, who came out since 2018 or a bit earlier, and they have 1,000 different rookie cards, then what? It's not like there's that question again, Dave. Then what? Because how do you choose which one to go for? I mean, you're going to take budget into consideration, among other things. What do you like the looks of? But yeah, I hear what you say. I think it does provide somewhat of a framework for collectors. Chris C says too many rookie cards now. And I it's weird. It's, I don't know. Too many means that definitively there's too many of them. Well, the products are selling out. So are there really too many, or is it too many for us? For me, it's too many. For Chris C, it's too many. Is it too many for the industry? Until they stop consuming them, it might not be too many for the overall industry, the overall hobby. Lapper says, I love rookie year modern cards, but I'd rather have a player's sixth year card I really like than a generic commodity type of rookie card. Dave, anything you want to add on to that?
Yeah, and for me, I think once a card for the vintage type players, I think especially when you go back to the 40s, 50s, 60s, I think there is a more special value in the non-first year card, the non-rookie cards as well. Like when I think of, I would love to own a Hank Aaron rookie, but I think I'd rather own it because then I could say that I owned a Hank Aaron rookie. But when I think about what my favorite Hank Aaron card is, it's the 58 with that green background. God, what a card, right? That is the most beautiful card.
Well, yeah.
It's for Hank Aaron, in my opinion, right? And if you don't mind, if I could show a card real quick.
Yeah.
I sold off all my Ohtanis since National ended. I sold one off because I needed to buy a new laptop. I sold some off because I just couldn't say no because the prices were so high before the injury. And then I had one other card that was just so way too much card for me that I realized I could, you know, help out the family a little bit and buy a bunch of other cards with it. And so I sold them all. They were gone. And I said on my podcast, maybe I should wait 2 or 3 years and 4 years until he hits this period called the lull, right? Where he's no longer the hot thing, but he's not at the end of his career yet. That's when prices dip. It's where, you know, Bryce Harper is now. It's where Mike Trout is now. Mookie Betts will be there pretty soon. Nolan Arenado. Anyway, I joked that, you know what, I bet you I'll buy one by March. There's no way I can wait 2 or 3 years. And I already bought one. And so the one that I want to show is the Ohtani rookie that I bought. And the reason that I want to show it is because I think it shows my frame of mind anyway of where I am. So when I think about the first Bowman cards that he had or the first Topps cards that he has, he's either batting or he's pitching. or they're taking a picture of him batting from a different side or a different angle, or he's waiting to swing or he's swinging. And if you cut the borders off, you didn't know what the board, if you didn't know if it was a 2018 or a 19 card or a Bowman or a Topps or any of those, you would not know what card was which. There, other than the RC on there, you didn't know what the Ohtani rookie was. It was so dull. There are some players who are just naturally charismatic, who have incredible looking cards, right? Like Mookie Betts, like Bryce Harper, like Yadier Molina. For whatever reason, their cards all look incredible. And then you have Ohtani and Pujols, who just, their cards put you to sleep. And so what I went for is I went and did something that 6 months ago I said I would never do, which is I went and I got an unlicensed card. And because I love the way it looked. And the card that I picked up is a 2018 Leaf Achievement Gold out of 100. Ohtani card. And yeah, he doesn't have the A on his hat because it's not licensed. I'll show it here in just a moment. But it just looked like a rookie card should look. It looked special. And I got it for about 1/15, 1/20th the price of a normal Ohtani rookie card that would be numbered to 100 and a PSA 10. And so if you can see it, that's it, right? Like, what a fantastic looking card, for, I think, anyway. Will it resell for anything? No, it's unlicensed, right? It's not even Panini. It's not even this Panini Prism Gold out of 10, which sells for four figures. It's a Leaf card. But I got that because I wanted his rookie, because rookies are special. But I also didn't want it to be generic. And I wanted it to be something that when I think of a rookie card, I can picture that card. And so I'm very happy to have that in my collection.
Yeah. That's the most important thing there. I'm so happy to have that in my collection, that comment there. You brought up the lull. You know, people often, I get with Connor Bedard being, you know, this phenom in hockey, I get so many people that are messaging me all the time saying, what Bedard card? Like, people who know I'm into the hobby, but they're not in the hobby themselves. Like, I'm hearing from people I haven't heard from since Connor McDavid came into the NHL asking me what to buy. And I say, just wait, you know, because they want to know as soon as it comes out, they want to buy it. And it doesn't work that way anymore. You're going to pay more right out of the gate, I feel, than you will a year or two later. Every player goes through a lull, whether they fall into a slump, they have a sophomore slump, or they get injured, which is now Connor Bedard's, you know, status. Although he doesn't have many cards out yet, so it's not going to hurt the value of his cards yet. But the lull is something that if you have lived through cycles of this hobby, you know that the lull for every player is coming, and you just have to wait for it so that you can, you know, be as economically responsible as possible. So that's the lull. I also listened to one of your episodes where you talk about, and I have to bring this up because it's where I don't agree with you, Dave. You say that the 69 Reggie Jackson rookie card, while a pleasant portrait card, isn't his nicest card. I think you mentioned you shed out the 78 Topps Reggie, which I went and looked at today. It's a fantastic card. I see why you love it, with that amazing batting pose. And he's got two cards in that set, I found out. They're both actually really nice. But the 69 Reggie Jackson, Dave, it's one of my favorite personally. So, you know, you struck a chord. You hit on a card that I truly love, is the 69 Reggie rookie. Something about that portrait, the green and the yellow with his name in the blue, in the purple circle in the top. I love that purple circle. I just love that. And Dave, I sold one of them. I sold my original copy. And you make this comment too that I want to touch on. You say that, you know, you can get a PSA 8 Reggie Jackson for $3,000 to $5,000, or you can get a PSA 8 78 Reggie Jackson for $700 or $800.
Oh, and no, it's like $75.
Well, okay, so yeah. Whatever it was, sorry. Yeah. But then I just wanted to touch on that a bit and say too, you know, that there are, you don't, to me, the comparison that I would make if I was choosing between those two Reggie Jackson cards is, you know, I can get a really nice PSA 3 or 4 Reggie Jackson for how much versus a really nice, you know, 78 Reggie Jackson. Like, I wouldn't be comparing eights personally. I would be comparing the card I want, because the grade, the technical grade on vintage cards is getting less and less important to me as time goes by, where I just want a card that I love the looks of. I sold my PSA 8 Reggie Jackson before the pandemic. Then it went up in value. I'm like, oh, what did I do? Hey, you know, you win some, you lose some. But then I reacquired a Reggie Jackson rookie at the, I think it was the very end of the Atlantic City National in 2022. It's a 6. And Dave, I can tell you with 100% honesty, my six is way nicer than my eight was. And that's my point there. But back to the Reggie. I just love the 69 Reggie rookie. But the card you point out is wonderful too. And you make a very good argument there as well.
And I do like the 69. And at some point I would like to have that in my collection because I have his 87 Fleer glossy card, that's when he went back to Oakland for his final year, right? When he was old and couldn't play much. And I just want to have that bookend. But this, to me, there's nothing like the 70. I totally hear what you're saying about the 69, but that 78, it's the end of that corkscrew swing of his, really reminiscent to Musial's cork swing, but more violent at the same time. And so I think that's how I remember him, right? I remember that swing, which he was trying to hit the ball out every single time. But yeah, the 69 with that sleeve, I think it has the sleeveless A's jersey as well, that retro, and yeah. It's a Oakland jerseys look terrific on cards.
Well, I think the Ricky Henderson rookie is another beauty. Like I love, and that's more of that's not a portrait like versus the Reggie rookie. It's more like the Reggie 78 tops where it's an action shot. You got the full body. I love those cards.
I love that. The 80 Henderson is one of my five all-time favorite cards.
That's a great card. It's a great card. Okay, Hobby Champs made the comment that rookie cards and rookie year cards are special because once that year is over, they cannot be reproduced. It's over, done. Those are your options. The supply is finite, which can drive demand. Yeah, I think what he's saying is if there's going to be 1,800 cards of a player in his rookie year, those are the only 1,800 cards you're ever going to be able to choose from his rookie year. And I say 1,800 to kind of prove the point or to emphasize the point that I hear the comment, but I don't buy it as much as I used to that Hobby Champs is making because the supply is finite, but there's tens and tens of thousands of them for many players, that have been released in the last 5 to 8 years. Which is why I don't even collect that many cards from the last 5 to 8 years, especially rookies, because there's just, if I fell in love with a player that's weird to say, fell in love with the player. If I really liked a player and I had to have their rookie card, I still don't know that I would buy it. I would probably look for a rarer, more interesting card than a card that I can go find 100 of them between eBay and PWCC and ComC any night of the week. I'd rather find something a little bit more challenging, but I do understand that once they are made, that is it. And any card that comes out after is not a rookie year card. However, with the way Panini and Topps and Upper Deck do things these days, Dave, is that will there ever be as many cards in the aggregate subsequent years as there are in the rookie year? Like, I don't know. Maybe there are, maybe for some players, probably, but for most, I don't think so. I think some players only get rookie year cards because they were rookie and then they don't do much after that. So tough. David Owen says, give me a PMG championship Mark McGuire over his 85 USA rookie card. All day, Dave. You had a visceral response to that. What are you thinking?
I mean, the PMG Champ McGuire is just insane, right? And some of his essential credential cards are gorgeous. And that 85 USA card is the only card I ever had come back as fake. I sent it off to SGC, and they said they wouldn't grade it. The card was a fake, and so I have a bit of a sour taste in my mouth with that card. But with David Owens bringing up the PMG Championship McGuire, that is a fantastic card. I was sideswiped by that one, David Owens, and I was not expecting it, which is why I swooned a bit.
Yeah, good. Hobby Champ says that's why I focus on more scarce alternative rookie cards like stickers, box set, box bottoms. Yeah, I hear you on that, Hobby Champs. I like the more obscure, the rarer. I think the card companies in the design department, I think they put more thought into inserts than they do into base cards. And I think they put more thought into parallels than because you have a base card. Well, what are we going to do for a parallel? Once you get out, once they leave the zoo, they have to be really creative to come up with what they're going to do. And I think they put more thought into that. So I'm with Hobby Champs on that. Larry said the 51 Bowman mantle and the maze versus the 52 tops maze. Well, there is no debate there in my mind, Larry. There's no debate. Mantle and Mays have one rookie card, and that's the 51 Bowman. The 52 Topps cards are more iconic, and they're more popular and more valuable, but that doesn't mean that they're rookie cards. They're just more iconic and more valuable because that's the way the hobby is. But the rookies are those 51 Bowmans, and to me, there is no debate about it. I don't think anyone would really debate that. And it kind of bothers me, Dave, when I hear industry experts and people in high places refer to a 52 tops mantle as a rookie, because it just isn't. I find it to be a little bit misleading, but I don't think they're doing it deliberately to mislead. I think they're just so conditioned to saying it that way. But, you know, leaders of the industry, the hobby, I think should know better and should properly describe these things.
Well, they're either being disingenuous, naive, or just showing their lack of education within the hobby. You know, the 51, that's amazing mantle. 52 is their most valuable.
Irish Flyer says hockey makes the preferred rookie card easy. Young Guns, no other sport really does that. And that is the preferred for the masses. But for a hockey collector, not for me. I mean, I have no Young Guns under ownership at all at this time. Not a single Young Guns under ownership at all. Dan here says the 1964 Pete Rose is way better than the Floating Head 63. See, I like the 63 because it's so weird looking. I recently sold my 64 and I kept my 63. I love the 64. Don't get me wrong, Dan. I love the 64. I also love the 71 Munson and the 69 Nolan Ryan and the 76 Gary Carter and so on and so forth. I'm with you on all those. OC Trust Attorney says, for me, the best baseball rookie card is Topps Base and Topps Chrome. And yeah, that I think that makes sense for a lot of people. Mike Petty says every player in every sport gets hurt nowadays. Pete Rose missed 10 games in 23 years. He's right, right? Like, talking about the lull. There's always going to be a lull coming. Mike Petty knows about my Reggie Jackson rookie card. He said, yeah, it is a beauty. Mike, David Owens loves the 1978 Topps baseball set. All right. All right, Dave, let's get back to you. When I was talking to you the other day, and I was asking you, what are some of your favorite episodes that you have done? You mentioned the episode that you did with Rob Girard, the former sports card therapist. And you, cause you were talking about the value of cards beyond money. And it led into your acquisition of your 1959 Topps Bob Gibson. Can you share with the audience a little bit more about what that episode and really what made it special for you?
Sure. I'd be happy to. So my mom taught me about sports, not my dad. And being from St. Louis, the Cardinals were the team. Baseball is a religion there, practically. And Bob Gibson was her favorite player. And you would hear, she would tell stories, or I'd read about stories, because I read so much about baseball growing up, about his competitive streak. And we all know about that 1968 season, the 1-1-2 ERA, all those shutouts. But my favorite story always about him was he had a teammate who he roomed on the road with, and they were very close. Their families dined together. And I think it was Bill White, I think. And he gets moved to the Phillies. And they're in the elevator going, you know, they happen to be in the elevator at the same time, the first time the Phillies play the Cardinals, when his old friend is now an opposing player. And Gibson says nothing to him, right? And his friend is saying, hey, Bob, how you doing? Gibson says nothing to him. And Gibson's pitching that day. He gets on the mound, and the first at bat just hits him, right? Pitch, like right in the back, right in the ribs, right in the legs, somewhere. And then after the game, Bob was talking to him. At this time, Bob's better. He's like, Bob, what the hell, man? Like, why'd you do that? He goes, because we're not teammates anymore. So I love Bob Gibson. She died years ago. My mom died in 05. So, you know, it's 18 years ago now almost. But I'd wanted, since I got back in the hobby, I wanted to get a Bob Gibson as a way of honoring her, right? Also me, because I like the card. I like the pink of the 59 Topps rookie, but it was also for her. And so finally, after 2 or 3 years of it being in my box, out of my watch list, in my inbox, gone, in, out, I finally went and I got one. And it was one that was in my price range, and it was one that was what I like to see out of a vintage card in terms of design and upkeep and centering and everything else. And I had heard Rob in the past talk about his dad's relationship to Mickey Mantle, and that's why he had some Mantle stuff as well. And so even though Rob helped get me started with the podcasting, I purposely never asked him on, because I just didn't want to, he was busy enough, right? And I thought, but this is finally the episode to do it. And I said, why don't you come on? And let's talk about cards beyond the value of their money, and cards beyond the value of flipping, and instead talk about cards on a much like more emotional, deeper level, and how they can connect you to different generations. And so for however long we talked, 45 minutes to an hour, however long it was, I talked about my mom and Gibson. He talked about Mantle and his dad. And then we also just talked about what cards can really mean. And it's just an episode that I'm really grateful to have been able to do. One thing about that Gibson that was weird is once I got it, it was more of a relief than it was joy, because I didn't have to be thinking about it anymore. And it's, I mean, it's not one I'm ever going to move or flip, right? Nothing like that, unless I absolutely am in some sort of a family financial crisis, anything like that. But it was almost just so intense that I was just happy to not have that in my watch list anymore. But that was part of it, right? It was so, it's a baseball card, but yet it had become so emotionally taxing that getting it was just a form of therapy, a form of relief. And so that's what Rob and I talked about for an episode.
Yeah. You know, you're talking about, you know, the Bob Gibson for your mom, the Mantle for him and his dad. And this is like elevated nostalgia in a way, because it's not just your own nostalgia for that player, that team, that time of your life when you were a fan of that player or team, but there's real emotional value, emotional meaning between you and that card, because it not only connects you to that player or that team, it connects you to your family member who's even no longer with you. At even more elevation towards the importance of that nostalgia. And that, I mean, you know, we always say, us collectors who have been around, who have been collecting since we were kids, doesn't matter how old you are now, but if you're collecting when you were 8 to 15 years old, somewhere in there, we always kind of say that it reminds me of those days when I didn't have to pay the mortgage, feed the kids, you know, go to work every day. I didn't have any responsibility. It takes us to an earlier time. It's why we like comic books and video games and all these things we used to do as kids. But there's even more to it when you can make the connection that you just talked about. And I don't know how many people have stories like that. For me, there is a bit of that, but it's more to do with friends than really family. I never collect with that. So I'm sure, but I just want people in the audience to kind of think about that right now. Think about like, why I always try and analyze myself. Why do I need cards? And we'll, want versus need is a whole other question that I know you ask as one of your six questions. But the want versus the need is a really important, is a really fun question. Why do we feel like we want and need these cards as collectors? Not to buy, to flip, or to sell, or I mean, as collectors, what is it that we're trying to what are we grasping at here when we are wanting these cards and spending, you know, whether you're in the shallow end and you're spending, you know, a little bit of money on it, or you're in the ultra deep end and you're spending more than you can afford on cards. Why is it that we're doing that? That's a whole sort of other topic. Anything else before we move on to the next one I wanted to touch on?
No, I would just say that at the end of last year, I like so many other people, right? I did my top 10 pickups of last year. And my number one, well, that Gibson was like number 4 or 5. I just didn't even want to put it higher than that because I still feel like, good, I got it, it's done. But my number one was the 53 Satchel Paige, which I finally got toward the end of last year when I had to move some Otanis to do it. But I was glad that of all the people that I decided to buy cards of at, you know, a couple of years ago, I'm glad it was Otani, because that enabled me to get the Paige. Anyway, I'm rambling. With the Otani, that also was a connection, because growing up with my grandfather, at the time, you know, St. Louis used to have two baseball teams. They had the Cardinals, but they also had the Browns. And he would tell stories when he was a kid in the 30s that he would, you know, sneak in to see Browns games, because the Browns even then weren't popular. The Cardinals were always the team. It's why the Browns moved to Baltimore, one reason. But I always had that in my head, that he would sneak in and he would see Browns games, and he would talk about seeing Babe Ruth, because the Browns were an AL team. And so the Yankees would come to town and he'd see Babe Ruth. And I wanted to have a player with a Browns car, with a Browns hat on. I didn't really want to go back as far as, you know, like George Sizzler or anyone like that. Right. I guess it was kind of cheating, because by the time that Satchel was on the Browns, my grandfather was already, you know, a World War II vet with 3 kids. But I still wanted to get something with the Browns. So even past the Gibson, I was still thinking about that connection, and not all my cards were like that. Right. But those are the two that do have that connection. So I just wanted to say that.
Yeah. Very nice. Very nice.